Okay, we will call the meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll?
Council President Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Jones?
Here.
Councilmember Boobin-Vanderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. Now, if you will join us for the invocation, Reverend Karen Hernandez.
Thank you. Let us pray. Living and loving God, frankly, I'm not grateful for extreme winter weather or crises, but I am grateful for the way that you have brought us together through some tough times. It's a gift to see neighbors reaching out to neighbors, strangers reaching out to other community members just because help is needed and suddenly help appears. I'm grateful for public servants who serve not just in their assigned roles, but serve wherever there is need, especially in times when the need is so great. We pray for those who are particularly vulnerable during storms and times of isolation, times when getting out is tough. We pray for those who are vulnerable because they're missing days at work, days of pay, missing days of school and learning. God, we pray that as another storm comes this way, we ask for mercy, frankly, but we also ask that you would continue bringing out the best, the most loving parts of your children, so that we might continue to share compassion with one another, to care for one another, to be the community that gives us a glimpse of your kingdom. We pray finally that you would continually guide our leaders, that they would be wise with your wisdom, gentle with your gentleness towards those who are most vulnerable, and that we might all seek justice in your name. In the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
Amen. Now, if you join me with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The first item up is the consent agenda. Is there anything that anyone would like to have pulled from the consent agenda for further discussion, or not a motion to approve?
Mayor, I just had a question on clarification, so I can do it through this, or if you want me to pull it, I can pull it.
You can do a clarification.
Okay. Regarding the accounts payable on page 7 of 27 for the expense for the archival supplies, I just wanted to clarify, we talked about purchasing all that at once for the roughly the $5,000, and it wasn't, we purchased about 25%, so I just want to know if our intent is still to do that. I know there was some concern to make sure that we had everything in-house so that our storage facility can be built to the size of all those archival records.
Chris?
Mayor, Councilmember Jones, the archive supplies are coming from different suppliers, so it's going to be a cumulative total of the different suppliers.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
Yeah, Mayor. Item number 4, the resolution with the Silver Butte Holsteins. I should have read through it a little harder, but didn't we already approve or do something with that not long back? What are we doing there?
Richard Rhodes, please.
Fine. Richard, how about you?
Councilmember McPherson, Mayor, for the record, Richard Rhodes. So we're trying to get these on track. So the one that we did four or five months ago, I think,
mm-hmm.
was catching up. And this is for the next year.
For 17?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there were some changes anyway because there's some different folks involved back here. So.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Mayor, Richard, is your intent to bring that back to us in September of this year so we can get on track to
yes.
so that the lease are signed before they actually go into effect?
Yeah. Typically okay. what happens is because it's the end of the season and stuff, yeah. they're not that motivated to do stuff, so yeah. they go out and they sit around, and then as they start getting gearing up. So we're trying to put that on the track with reminders, get those in by our fiscal year.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion to amend seconded to approve the consent agenda. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, consent agenda has been approved. The next item is a public hearing. Public hearing and consideration to approve ordinance number 2017-01, amending CUNA City Code 16-04-ZOA zoning ordinance amendment, request by the City of CUNA. This is an ordinance of the City of CUNA, Idaho, amending Title 6, Chapter 3, Section 4, Part A of the CUNA City Code, entitled Street Right-of-Way Widths, to change the right-of-way for a residential local street from 51 feet to 50 feet, and a new Part E to provide standards for access to collector and arterial streets, providing for a severability clause and providing an effective date. Wendy Howell? Okay.
This is Wendy Howe, Planning Zoning Director for the City of CUNA. These amendments are to change the local street right-of-way width from 51 feet to 50. This will comply with what we're getting in for plats and what is being approved through ACHD. The second part of the ordinance was to limit access so that subdivisions that have the rear of their lot facing a collector or sometimes arterial, they're wanting to have a second access off of that rather than the interior subdivision road. By adding this language, it will prevent them from being able to do that and use the interior subdivision road. And I will stand for questions.
Okay, questions for Wendy?
Wendy, this only affects subdivisions and not commercial developments.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor?
Yes.
Is this a carryover of Sutter's Mill over there?
Yes, it is. Okay. It's an attempt to clarify the issue we were having there and then define what we wanted. For those of you who may not know, we have a subdivision that in the plat prohibited access to a back road that abutted the subdivision. Some of the people without permission had put in rear driveways for RVs and those type of things. So an individual came in and said, can I do this? And we said, no, not only does it say that you can't on your plat, but it's not something we want to encourage. They went to ACHD, who said, go back and find out what the city says. So we discussed it and said, you know, we really don't want these, for example, on 10 Mile, those homes in those subdivisions that about 10 Mile putting in second driveways for RVs. Can you imagine on a Sunday evening? 10 mile or Hubbard or whatever. So that's where it came from, was to deal with that. But I know you and I spoke about it, so this is language to clear part of that.
Richard, if I have a corner lot, would this address my being able to access to my backyard other than my driveway?
If your corners are within the subdivision, you'll have to deal with the subdivision portion. This is just intended to prohibit you from, if you have a corner here, putting your other driveway, maybe a second or third driveway, onto the arterial road.
Okay.
So the subdivision would be different, and within the subdivision would be different.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, this is a public hearing. We didn't have anyone sign in on the sheet to testify. Is there anybody at this time who wishes to sign in to testify on this matter? Okay, hearing none, we still have to open the public hearing. And I will ask again, is there anyone who wishes to testify in this matter? Seeing none, if I could get a motion to close the public hearing.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made second to close the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Is there any more questions or comments on this issue or motions by council? I think this is something we can fast track on. I don't see any reason to carry out three readings unless that is your preference.
Move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2017-01.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of the ordinance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2017-01.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve Ordinance Number 2017-01. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobman Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2017-01.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve a summary publication of Ordinance 2017-01. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Ordinance number 2017-01 will become law upon publication. Item 8, business items. So item 8A, consideration of additional funds from contingency for the downtown revitalization project to relocate the project drainage, adjust the roadway asphalt depth to meet ACHD's requirements, relocate power underground, add two bulb outs on the west side of Avenue D and Main Street, and construct an asphalt path at the southeast corner of Main Street and Avenue E. Chris Ingalls.
Thank you, Mayor. If I can just get a second, I gotta move this. Thanks for your patience. Wanted to just review the requests that we have. Our team has met and during the early design of our project, the geotechnical engineer encountered some shallow rock, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone, in Main Street where the underground seepage beds were to be located. So we incurred additional expenses because of that, as well as the drainage design being modified to relocate it under the facilities at the 4th Street Gym, which we have received that easement from the CUNA School District, and we appreciated that. Currently, the project as it stands, as it's funded, with the bidding climate as it is, and the input from the Downtown Design Committee, there are three options for additional components and a contingency adjustment for council to have discussion and consideration. The request for council consideration is an additional $140,200. Those additional funds would cover the cost to relocate the project drainage, adjust the roadway asphalt depth to meet ACHD's requirement. Early on in design, when we were establishing the budget, we had a different depth than what ACHD actually requires coming off of the roundabout. To add also two bulb outs to slow traffic at that main intersection, which you can see here is in your handout is the intersection that we're really talking about here. And then consideration for an asphalt path at that southeast corner of Main Street and Avenue E. The two top priority options are options one, which is the Idaho Power relocation, take it underground. That there's that, as you can see in the photos, the power pole is just like right in the middle there of everything and has been for a number of years. And it's a hazard for traffic. It's a hazard for pedestrians, business, all of that's in there. Also, option two is a priority to us. The bulb outs will help continue to slow traffic in that intersection. We have had a pedestrian that got hit there a couple years ago. We see a lot of roll through. It's just a very busy intersection, I think, as everybody knows. Option three is an asphalt path with extended extruded curb, and it'd be at the southeast corner of Main Street and Avenue E. So it'd be across the street from the easement. And then option four for consideration would be adjusting the contingency from 20 to 30%. The estimates that are listed in your memo, in your packet, there is that option for an additional $75,000. If you decided to increase the contingency, it'd bring the overall request of everything included be $215,200. I also want to let you know that as we've worked through this project, we continue to option our funding opportunities. And currently, we have two requests pending with our TMA TAP grant through Compass to increase the funding by the $140,200 less, 0.734% match, which is standard on federal monies. It will be reviewed for the first time by RTAC on January 25th. And then the second one is with Idaho Power to contribute the cost of relocating the power underground. And you'll see in your sheets also that that's at $80,000. This has been a great project. It's had great feedback. It's has a well and large partnership. It's won two awards already. It's being watched closely by Compass and ITD and ACHD and others, other cities, to see how does such a multi-level federal, local, state funds, so many agencies that have invested in the partnership, how does that work and how does it come out in the end that, you know, it's successful and everybody has given some. As you'll see that the attached rendering with the areas are noted, and the photos of the area in question, and as well as the budget sheets. There's a couple things. We are running into a time constraint, and we need to know for the federal funding timelines for design, which is why the request is in front of you at this time. The other thing I'd like to note is that we've talked about before when we ask for funds, when we have grant funding pending, that if there is monies left over or councils had to put in extra monies on projects, that if that money is not needed, that it goes back to the funds from which it came from, which would be the general plus the enterprise. That also would be the same treatment in this if council was to approve any of or all of the options included. I'm going to turn any technical questions. I'll stand for questions and then turn any technical questions over to Tim Blair. He is the engineer with JUB, who are our consultants, and, of course, Bob Bachman, as we all are working on the same team. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So is there anything you guys want to add to what Chris just said or just stand for questions? Okay. Questions from council? And we should note that these are options. You can accept some or
here,
however you want to do it.
I have several questions, of course.
Okay.
I guess I wanted to step back a little bit regarding these seepage beds, and I don't know who can answer that for me. Was it originally planned that these seepage beds were to be on Main Street, or were they to be off-site?
For the record, Bob Bachman, Council and Mayor. Originally, the seepage beds were going to be on Main Street.
I guess I'm a little confused because when we were part of the, or I was part of the steering committee, I was told that the seepage beds were off-site, and that was the reason why Avenue E had to be included in the first phase to for connecting activity between the two, Avenue E and D, to run that drainage off-site. I guess that if that information was given to me, that information was inaccurate.
Councilman Jones, I honestly don't remember that information being given that way.
I'm just confused on that, because that was the information that I was given, because I was concerned of why we were doing Avenue E and D first, and we couldn't do D and C first, and that was the reason why Avenue E had to be done first.
Yeah, Tim, thank you.
Councilman Jones, for the record, Tim Blair, JEV Engineers. Originally, in the steering committee meetings, we started on the west end is because the natural ground of the road and the flow and the drainage flows to the west. So building the seepage beds on the west end first makes sense from a constructability standpoint, because we start at the low end and work our way upstream. And if there was a potential there in phase one to capture some of the phase two water, then it would enable us to do that. And also it allows us to look at phase two to see what's happening in phase two. I'm referring to the east end of the project. To look what's happening there and make sure that we don't hinder any improvements on that end. So There are some existing seepage beds off-site, but they're the existing ones that were, I think, may have been mentioned before.
And I guess that's probably my misunderstanding then of not knowing the technical terms of why that my confusion between the two different, because that makes sense. I do have a question regarding the budget. Before I go into the actual overall budget, on line 51 it shows the decorative street lights and banners, but it's saying excluding wire and conduits, so I'm assuming that it cost is not in this total budget and that those will be additional costs that will be needed in the future.
I believe those costs will be covered in another item. They were lumped into a different item. Let me look here. That would be covered underneath item 63, I believe.
Okay. And then to go over the budgeting or the funding for this, the way I read it off of this memo, we have already been given the $500,000 from Idaho Department of Commerce, $198,000 from Compass, the first phase line, $200,000 from ACHG, and $140,000 from the city. If I add all that up, that gives me a total of, I believe it was $1,038,000. Currently, the budgeted shows me that it's currently in at $1,026,400, so there's a difference of $11,600 between what we've been funded and what we've actually allocated to be spent. And I'm curious if those numbers are correct. I'm reading it that way.
Do you want me to answer that, Chris? Do you want to? Okay. Councilman Jones. From a funding standpoint, I believe the $500,000 for TMA TAP from Compass also includes engineering fees with that and grant administration, so it's not quite at the $500,000 range. It would take out those funds to facilitate those tasks.
But that's part of your budget, though, of the $1,026,000 of the costs, I should say.
Yeah, the overall.
Yeah, so what I'm getting at is I'm showing that there currently is $11,600 that we have funded that we have not spent that we could use for something else. This is my... to maybe cover the cost of some of these other items.
I'm trying to pull up something.
I guess we can just move on from there. I mean,
Council President Jones, Mayor, of the 140,000, excuse me, I can't break out the numbers specifically on the 11,000, but I know of the $140,000 that's included. That is city, and it also includes some of the bench money as well that we've received. So it's city and local money. And you're correct at the 198, and I do believe that in the budget, part of that 11,000, we show that the phase total is 1,026,4, and then if we're showing that the grant funds are at 1,038. Sorry, I'm slow tonight, and I apologize. And that 11,000, I want to say that it's possible that if you go down and you look at the offset of the 28, that we would go back through and we could comb it for that 11,000. But I believe that part of that 11,000 is actually some funding that we didn't anticipate would have to go to ITD. We thought that they were going to be able to waive part of their fee, which is about $5,000 to administer, because they're the federal administrators for the federal funds, the TMA TAP monies. And then part of it, too, is that it's local money and city money, which part of it is that sponsorship program for the benches. But if you'd like a more specific on that, we'll certainly pull that together for you.
I guess my only question is whether or not that money can be used, or has it already been allocated for something else?
I believe it's been allocated, okay. Sir.
Do you know who owns the property between the curb and the fence on Avenue E?
On the south side?
On the, it'd be the north side, between the fence at the on the 4th Street gym, between the fence and the curb that's being landscaped.
The
school
district?
School district.
Or ACHD right of way there.
Okay, so that's ACHD's property. Okay. I guess before I go into these separate items, I know one of the concerns that the stakeholders had at the meeting was the contribution of taxpayer money to this project, and they were concerned that the amount of that being used. Currently, we are looking at roughly about a 20% contribution from taxpayer money compared to grant money for phase one. If we were to approve all of this, that moves us up to 33%. So now we're going from a fifth to a third of taxpayer money being used to fund this project. Does those act numbers seem correct?
I'm going to say if you've run the numbers, then those percentages would be correct. And that's why we have continued to try and keep taxpayer investment at the lowest that we can, but also meet the same investments, same investment enthusiasm that other stakeholders have met as well. We also do recognize, and this came through on this from the stakeholders quite well, starting at the original meeting that occurred in October of 2013, and that is that really downtown CUNA is the only history that CUNA has that's left intact, and that would be also our gateway to the park and the Indian Creek. And so, no, we're not wanting to increase more than we have to. And what we're looking for is not decorative items, but safety items. And we are looking at additional allocations as well. So certainly I understand the concern, and I understand the feedback that you're talking about and has been discussed. But that power pole there, it's a hazard. We have, Bob did meet with Idaho Power already, Blake Watson, to discuss Idaho Power's contribution. It appears we'll need to continue to go up the chain on that, and we've had to ask our attorney to look at our franchise agreement. So we are continuing to work on that, but these are not decorative. These are safety and accessibility items that, we are glad to discuss with you.
So going off of the power pole, There's currently nothing wrong with the power pole as far as it going to fall down or anything like that. And are we removing just that one power pole, or are we removing the whole string of power poles along that road?
I'm gonna have Tim answer that because I don't.
Mr. Mayor, Councilman Jones, for this estimate, it would be just that one power pole, but they would have to go underground for the upstream and downstream power pole for conduit and then connect the two underground with underground facilities. So.
Do you, and I assume you're familiar with Main Street. I mean, obviously you've walked that. Do you feel that's going to be the same thing regarding the power pole as in front of the firehouse on Avenue? I'm going to say B, but I'm probably wrong.
Yes.
It potentially could be. We haven't, I haven't laid out the layout for phase two yet in detail. So once we actually put in the bed ramps and stuff, we'll know at that time. But it could potentially be an issue.
Do you feel that, and obviously you haven't worked up any bids, I understand that. Looking at this, it seems to me that phase two is going to require a lot more construction than phase one, and therefore it's going to require more funding to do phase two compared to phase one. Do you think that's an accurate statement?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. Because where my concern is on the side of obviously the funding side, asking for the, and I'm just going off of that, none of these are going to be funded by other, I mean, Idaho Power, for example, hypothetically won't give us any money, and we're not going to gain any more other money to do these projects or these additions. With the additional $214,000, that's roughly 22% of our contingency that we're going to be spending for this year on a project that I'm just concerned about spending that amount of money. I'm concerned with the bulb out. I mean, as ACHD reviewed, that we can actually add that additional to it because the additional that it looks like is being added to the one that's on where Super C is on that corner is even going to be farther in that street. And if we add the other bulb out on the other side, I mean, that's going to be a very narrow passage to try to make those turns. And I don't know if you're familiar, a lot of people cut that corner. They come in down going east, westbound on Main Street, and then they cut right across the corner to go on that gas station. I mean, literally over where it says stop in the road. Maybe the bulb outs will discourage that. I don't know. But I am concerned about the space and limited space that there is there, especially if you're going to bring out the other side. And so I'm wondering if curious if ACHD has looked in to see if the bulb outs are even feasible there.
Jones, we did submit plans from a preliminary design review standpoint to ACHD with our current layout, and there were no comments on that particular issue that I recall. And from a location standpoint, what we're also considering doing at the back of that bulb out is doing a retaining wall, kind of a separation barrier between the gas station and the pumps and the back of the bulb out, maybe a raised wall a little bit so that it would create kind of a barrier there.
Wouldn't that be a safety issue if somebody wanted to do that?
The bulb out itself is actually they're designed for trucks to go over the top of them if they need to. So, I mean, you can't. I mean, we can design it. You know, it's not a truck route,
no.
So you shouldn't be designing it to like WB 67 or anything at that size. But and hopefully the truckers are going in the correct routes on the south side of town, you know, around Indian Creek, not going through the local streets in downtown.
Yeah.
As we neck down those crossings, it's mainly for pedestrian safety. It reduces the crossing width and distance between each bulb out. It creates a bigger landing for the pedestrians. And another consideration for this was continuity down the corridor so that each location looks similar as we go through those two bulb outs, which we didn't have in the original plan to replace those because they were recently upgraded. But one of the comments we received was to make it or have continuity and look the same as it goes through. So it's part of this request also.
And then the last item that the second last item that's being asked for is the asphalt. Is that another ACHD owns that property where the asphalt's going?
Yes, they own the right-of-way in that location. That'd be correct.
Do you strongly believe that that will actually be used as a walking path? And the reason I say that is that if you're coming eastward on that, there is no crosswalk to cross over Bridge Street right there. There's only to that little island and then cross over to the other sidewalk where the 4th Street Gym is. My impression is that once we build out Avenue E, which I think is still in our future down there, that most people that are walking on that side of the street are going to cut down the Greenbelt right there and run up Avenue E. So I'm cautious of spending that money when it may not possibly be used to its full potential, especially if we're looking to spend that money that we need other items to spend that money on. Regarding the contingency, I guess I don't know if disappointed is the word, but I mean, we haven't even broken ground, and now we're being asked to raise this project by 20%. I hesitate to know what's even going to be out there when we start breaking ground. I personally would rather wait on these items, one, to see if we get funding for them first, and then have that money aside or that money available for anything that we really need to do. I mean, I don't know, what's going to happen with the seepage bed. I don't know if we have to hammer. Hopefully we're not going to have to blast. But I'm hesitant to allocate that money without even knowing. I mean, if we were halfway through the project, I'd be a little more concerned. I'm also quite concerned about if that phase two is going to cost more money that we're going to need that funding for possibly the phase to fund phase two. I had some questions for John, but unfortunately with him not being here, that's going to make my decision maybe more difficult. I am curious to why there's no contingency added to the power pole and there's contingency added to everything else for the additional items that you're adding, the 20 or 30%.
Councilmember Jones, if I could field that, because the estimate came from Idaho Power itself. So that I'm going to kick it back to Tim, is that I'm going to kick back the reason why it's more expensive to wait, and that is based on bidding and the bidding process. But Idaho Power itself, the reason there is an additional contingency added in there and it's in the overall is because Idaho Power provided the estimate of what it would take for them to make that move. So it doesn't go out to a contractor from us. We don't bid that out. They do it. And then I'll ask Tim to elaborate a little bit more on the bidding dynamics. He'll be more smooth on that.
In talking with staff, we had talked through the current bidding climate, and what we had found out this next summer, ITD is going to release, I think, 37 projects for construction. We're anticipating the construction market this next summer to be very busy, busier than it has been probably in the last 5 years. So that, in retrospect, may drive up the prices next spring and next summer as we go into this project. It's, you know, for sure until we actually bid the project, but we're anticipating a potential increase in prices and costs because they're just maxed out with resources. The other thing about the contingency amount the reason why we added it in is, we hit shallow rock. There could be a potential for rock blasting as we get into that to install the pipes. We know that we don't have to be rock blasting to install the seepage bed because we did test pits at that location, actually two or three test pits at that location, so we know it'll work at that location to install it at the 4th Street Gym property, and that's why we picked that parcel and that location. It's just getting the water there underground is what the unknown is.
Yeah.
We did, I think, 8 drillings along Main Street, and the shallowest, it was 4.5 feet. The deepest, it was almost 10 feet. But the difference in horizontal distance between a 10-foot hole and a 4-foot hole may be 5 or 6 feet. So the rock elevation underground is very irregular. It's not a uniform platform from what we actually got back in the test results. So it's kind of unpredictable. And the hope was that on option 4, if you were to approve it, if the bids come in, we were hoping potentially we wouldn't have to come back to you. But there's no guarantee with that until we actually get the bids in. Once we once it's actually let and we get our bids in and we have an apparent low bidder, then if it's in budget, then we're great. If not, then we may have to come in back at that time and request additional funds, but hopefully not.
So you're saying that you may even need even more?
With this 30% contingency, I'm pretty confident that we won't, but there's no guarantee because we just don't know what the field of the market is this next summer yet.
And you feel that you can't get those bids without having that approval first?
Well, no, we would like the authorization for approval tonight, just so we know what, from a design standpoint, on which other options you approve, on what we're going to proceed and put in the bid package.
But we can't just put that in the bid, and then if we decide not to do it, we no longer can pull that out?
The option four is a contingency amount. It doesn't go in the bid.
No, I understand that. What I'm saying is it's being presented to me that you need this approval to get the bids, and I'm asking is that why can't we get the bids? And if you need the money, come see us at that point so I know exactly how much you're looking for. So that's where my question is that can we go ahead and proceed with getting the bids and still have you come back? Because I have some concerns about the money. And I really, with John not being our treasurer, I'm going to probably tell you right now, I will hesitate on voting for this tonight without asking some questions from him. And that's where being that we're under a time constraint, which I don't know. I won't comment on that. But I'm just very concerned that we're already asking for money. We haven't even broke ground. You're asking me to ask the taxpayers to spend $70,000 to bury a power pole. I can almost guarantee if that was asked to the citizens that it would create an uproar, that we want to spend $70,000 to bury a power pole for cosmetic. If it's a safety issue, I think Idaho Power should pay it, period. I mean, if it's truly a safety issue, why is it the city's responsibility? It's, so I have some concerns with that. I have some concerns with, we're talking about slowing traffic there. I mean, we have a four-way stop sign there. If we're having people roll out, unfortunately, I think that's an enforcement issue. So I think that we're addressing the concerns not accurately, which would fix the problems.
Just, Councilman Jones, to respond to your question regarding the power pole, we assumed it was on Idaho Power's, I guess, it was on their cost to relocate it because it's inside the right-of-way. But that depends on the city's franchise agreement, what your agreement is with Idaho Power, on who pays for what, given the circumstances of the project. So that would, I think Richard's working through that with Idaho Power. The second option for the holdouts, they weren't included in our original concept plan. So to maintain continuity and feedback from the stakeholders, we would, authorization to it, like include these would allow us to actually get it in the design, give us a little more money from a design fee to just accommodate those two holdouts and get those in the plan as an additive alternate bid and before we go out to construction. So it's actually in the plans going to the contractors.
And I understand that. I mean, I guess I'm a little, I don't understand why now, after a year and a half, that we're now thinking about these bulb outs that we weren't thinking about them before. Because I know even in the original concept plan where the asphalt was, that was originally going to be sidewalk. And that was taken, I'm assuming, for cost, the cost to put that in.
So I think, just to kind of help clarify, some of this has come up. We're in the engineering phase now. And so as we go through this and we're actually out there physically looking at these things, that's when these questions arise. Is it really wise to have a power pole on the corner there that is susceptible to being hit and that type of thing? And while we're in this process, maybe we ought to do bulb outs on this corner. Maybe we ought to make the sidewalk connectivity on the opposite side of the street. And that's kind of how these questions came up, with the exception of the drainage beds and that. I mean, that's something that through the testing and drilling that we discovered there was an actual problem and went after that. So It's not so much that we're here asking for money as it is that that they're here asking your opinion on how far do we want to take this project. Do we want to go ahead, get rid of that power pole, run those lines underground and be done with that problem? Or is it the preference of council to not spend that money and just have that power pole moved? In regards to the sidewalk connectivity, you can also say, well, somebody else owns that property across the street, so when they go to develop that, maybe we can require them to pay for that. So basically what they're doing here tonight is presenting to you that the questions that came up during the engineering phase, it's not that you come back asking for more money, it's just say, well, do you want to expand this project? Go ahead and put some bulb outs here and move this power pole and move the lines underground. And that's why there's options. So you can pull some or pull all or, you know, whatever the council's preference is here. So it's not like we've created a problem here. It's just that more questions arose during the engineering phase, and that's why we're here tonight with this issue.
I guess I'm done. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Further questions, Rich?
Before Tim leaves, the Ada County on the east side of Avenue E put in a stormwater collection pond down there. It's pretty large. It'll be directly east of the pizza place, right on the corner, and it runs north-south. Are we going to utilize that or put in a separate unit east of that?
Council President Cardozo, we're going to put in a new system. That system that exists there today was sized to handle whatever water that they did improvements on at that time. Ours is sized to pick up water from down Main Street for our first phase.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I got.
Okay.
I have a question for somebody. If I add options 1 through 3, I get 129.8, but it says the request is for 140,200.
Chris Ingles for the record. 129 is less 7.34%.
And where would I see that somewhere in the packet?
Van, if you don't mind, I was reading that as the 140 is minus the 129 equals the 10,000, which is what the cost was to move the seepage bed and the additional asphalt thickness.
But I mean, is that written somewhere, or did you?
No, I just saw it in the very first part of that memo on that. Let me pull that page up. The third paragraph down, the where it's asking for the additional 140, additional funds wouldn't cover the cost to relocate the product drainage, adjust the roadway asphalt depth, to relocate the power, the two bulb outs, and then the asphalt pass. So I just deducted those three items from the 140 to leave the remaining funds of 10,000 to do the relocate the drainage and the asphalt depth.
Okay.
Which I'm assuming that you feel that's the correct amount of money to do those three items. If I may, Fran, if you're asking a question.
If it's located somewhere, I would love to see it, but otherwise, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't see it spelled out anywhere, okay. But I just read it that way. I did have one quick question. What do you plan on putting above the seepage bed on that Avenue E at the corner?
Councilman Jones, we have agreed with ACHT to allow a surface to be paved on top of that if the school district decides to do some kind of a parking lot or something, which is the thicker depth on top.
Rain, I had a question. I don't want to cut your time. So
nope,
if you,
that was
okay.
Who
is if we have to go into that seepage bed, who's responsible to remove that asphalt and then re-asphalt it after if we have to access that seepage bed?
Sure.
Council Member Jones, the school district would be responsible for that.
Okay, so the school district will be aware of the plans of what we put on there, knowing that there may be additional costs to remove that concrete and replace it if we have to get into those seepage beds compared to grass, let's say.
I actually, when we presented to the school district, I actually brought that up right in the very beginning, so they were aware that there wasn't anything hidden there, that if they did put asphalt on there or concrete or wherever the case may be and it needed to be worked on in that seepage bed, that whoever owns the property at the time would be responsible for removing the asphalt and the concrete.
So the seepage bed will maintain the property of the school district, with the school district deciding what goes there will not become part of the project for additional items to be placed there.
Councilman, no, that's correct. Okay. The school district has the option to landscape or whatever they want on top of it.
Yeah, obviously.
And it will be an ACHD easement and owned and maintained by ACHD.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, further questions?
Can anybody comment on, I know we're talking about doing the bulb outs to improve safety on that intersection. Can anybody comment on whether the addition of the bulb outs reduces the potential concern with regard to maintaining the pole? I mean, if our concern is, oh, people can hit the pole now, if we're adding a bulb out to make that more difficult, is it still a concern? Or would the addition of the bulb out minimize the potential hazard of that pole? Yeah.
Bourbon Vonderhaar. I can respond to that question. If we do install a bulb out, like we show in the plan, at that intersection, we will have to relocate that pole. That pole will have to go back about 5 feet to the north from where it is today. So the concern is that it may further impede vehicles from going in and out of that gas station from where it is today. So,
can you maybe, I don't know if there we can pull, put the picture back up, but as I look at, as I was listening to you describe it, I was under the impression there was going to be a retaining wall or something that would eliminate the ability of cars to come in to the gas station from Avenue D. Is that not the case?
We'll maintain access, what the current access is there today.
So what retaining wall were we talking about?
Just behind the ped ramp itself.
Can you be more descriptive?
Can I point to it? Or
sure. I mean, are we talking like it would be in front of the pole or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it like the black line where on the other three corners there's a curved red line?
That's correct.
Okay.
And I guess to be clear, the pole could be relocated. That's one option, to not go underground.
So I guess a follow-up question would be, is the cost for relocating the pole included in the $50,000 for the bulb outs?
Council members, Ruben Vonderhaar. The cost for just relocating the pole is $11,000, and that's an estimate from Idaho Power. And Richard Roats, originally Mr. Watson indicated that it was not covered, that we would have to cover those costs. However, Richard looked at our franchise agreement, as Gordon is aware of it as well, and we are not responsible for that $11,000. So if we choose to just have it moved, then that is an Idaho Power cost to absorb.
And also in previous conversations with Idaho Power, they had stated that they would cover that cost, but then in a recent conversation with another Idaho Power member, they said they would not because of in our franchise agreement. We are still assuming that they're going to cover that $11,000 cost. However, not knowing now, and there was a question raised, that's why we're asking for the $11,000. If we don't, you know, we'll continue to negotiate, and hopefully we won't have to cover that. That's something that they will cover, but we just don't want to. We can't commit them to something that we are not 100% sure that they're going to commit to, so.
So that it doesn't look like that's included right now, though, correct?
It's not. It's not included. Richard, did you want to address the franchise agreement on that?
Council, I have looked at the franchise agreement language, and it's pretty clear on that cost allocation, so we'll continue to follow that up.
Okay. My main question, I guess what I was getting at is if the cost to move the pole was included in option two, whether we would recognize a savings in option two if we also went with option one. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense.
It makes perfect sense, but no, there wouldn't be a realized savings.
Yeah.
Can I ask why that pole has to be moved? Why it can't stay there?
Councilman Jones, the pole could stay there where it's at today. I guess the concern was potential for access and egress for the vehicles, maintain that current dual access they have on either corner on Avenue D and Main Street.
But if we leave it there, then that they would maintain the current access, mm-hmm. except the bulb out would continue a little farther east than what it currently is.
Right.
And then you would plan on putting a retaining wall between the pole and the sidewalk.
It seems, I mean, maybe I'm just not, I'm sure this isn't like drawn exactly to scale, but it seems like moving it 5 feet north would make it considerably more difficult to continue having access from Avenue D for cars to access the gas pumps.
You're correct, Councilmember Bibben van der Haar. If it moves 5 feet to the north, I believe it sits within a lane getting in and out of the pumps.
So is there still access then for cars from Avenue D into the gas?
Tim?
Yes, Councilman.
Okay.
There would be.
So you're saying we don't, I mean, you just reiterate, but we don't have to move the pole at all. We can leave it where it is, and it will not affect anything. And then we can do the bulb outs. And we can put the bulb out and leave the pole where it's at, and then build around the pole to maybe increase a little more safety value without having to spend the $70,000.
Councilman Bill, that's correct. I mean, it would increase safety to have the pole gone, and that was a request from the stakeholders. One of the top priorities is to remove the pole. That's why it was included in the packet. But from a design standpoint, we could design it and have it relocated in its current location, you know, close to its current location.
Can I ask a question of Rhodes real quick?
Yeah.
So based on your read of the franchise agreement or whatever it is, I'm forgetting the word. I mean, is Idaho Power responsible for the $70,000 of taking the pull out?
Councilmember Bibben van der Haar, the franchise agreement addresses the relocation at the city's request. Your question really poses two different situations. One is a relocation of the power pole for $11,000, and the other one would be a burying of the lines. We haven't got to that discussion yet to find out if they would be willing to, number one, pay. There was a change in their opinion, but also the putting it underground versus the $11,000 to just relocate it. So that'll have to take place in further discussions.
Okay.
Certainly, we would hope that they would realize the safety issue with the bearing of the lines and not have that at that corner, but I'm not sure how they're going to proceed.
Yeah.
Sergeant, would you be willing to answer a question for me?
Could you go to the mic, sir? I'm sorry.
You should have said no to that.
Offhand, do you recall how many times that... Maybe that pole's been hit. I know a stop sign's been hit before. I've seen that bent. But are you aware of any vehicle crashes into that pole at that corner?
For the record, Sergeant Briggs, Kena Police. Looking at the pole, you can tell it has been bumped a few times. I can recall one vehicle in the gas station bumping into it a couple years ago, but I don't recall any significant incidents beyond that one.
Okay, thank you.
And I know, to clarify, I know traffic does go very close to it.
Yeah.
Being a resident here myself, when I pull in there with my big rig, I know I get very close to it. Most pickups will be very close to where their mirrors, so moving it 5 feet north would significantly change things. But it is very close to traffic moving, both on that side where the gas pumps are, as well as when he brings in his tanker truck to fill his tanks. That tanker truck pulls right in there beside it as well. So it's right in the middle of a lot of movement.
Oh, yeah. No. Okay. Thank you. That was good. Thank you. The other thing I wanted council to consider is I know everybody is aware that property is currently for sale, as is the 4th Street Gym. There is a possibility that if that property gets sold, that gas station may not even be there. So if the property wasn't for sale, I can understand that being there, but we don't know what's even going to happen with that gas station, so it may even become a mute point of having that access there. Obviously, we can't foresee the future, but I just wanted to take that into consideration. And that somebody just spent money to rebuild that sidewalk there not too long ago.
Well, I'll share my perspective. I share some of Pat's concerns in the sense that $70,000 for, I understand it's a safety thing, but it feels more like a cosmetic thing. And just the idea of like how much other stuff we might be able to do with that amount of money. I also tend to agree, but could be persuaded otherwise if somebody would like to try, about the asphalt path and just how much it might be used, because it doesn't connect to anything on the west side of it. And I don't see a safe way to get off of it once, you know, unless you just cross where we're proposing it starts on the east side. So I'm kind of struggling with that one as well, because I'm just not sure how utilized it would be. But I, like I said, I welcome arguments to the contrary.
Chris Ingles, for the record. I definitely hear what you guys are saying about option one and the cost to bury the power relocation. I think the bulb outs are pretty important just for a variety of reasons. I think that our team would be happy, and on option three, that asphalt path, I'd like to try and talk you out of it, but I think your points are valid. I think Council Member Jones's points are valid. And it's a lower costed budget. It may not get used. And as we work on Avenue E down towards the Greenbelt anyway, the dynamics of how that pathway is being used might change considerably. So I could see the benefit to withholding on that. I would ask that if Council does decide to fund option two, if they would give some consideration to a little bit higher on the contingency, which wouldn't be the amount that's asked for in the memo. But I would also ask council direction that if we do receive the funding as I've submitted for the additional funding from Compass on the TMA TAP grant, if that is approved, would we be able to accept those funds to bury the electricity at that intersection, do the bulb outs, and then also the pathway. Those are the funds that we've asked for, and then the monies that you have approved, use those towards the 7.34% match of that $140,000. If council would be open to that, if they at this time decided that city funds should be limited to option two. Does my question make sense?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, I do know that we do have, I think, approximately $10,000 set up in this year's budget for sidewalks that we possibly could use that money for that asphalt if the intent is to put it there as a possibility. To go a little farther on this, have we even discussed possible city grants regarding the facades and stuff like that? I know that was discussed, that maybe looking into how we going to get participation from the business owners on Main Street to improve their facades and And at that point, I would assume that's going to be other money that's going to be requested for this project. Is that still in consideration to look at possible funding for that?
I think definitely that council weighs in heavily on that, and they make the ultimate decision. The design committee as a whole, though, because the business owners downtown, for the most part, other than a few, really have stepped forward and done their own facades and made the investment of their own funds without grant funds being asked for or city funding being asked for. We have stepped back from that because we felt like it was an expense that already was being invested by the property owners themselves. So when we have so many on Main Street already that are using their own funds and then to supplement others because, you know, we rolled the grant funds out at a later date, it just didn't seem like that was the equitable thing at the time to do.
And then one last thing, and I'll let council. Is there still discussion that regarding the rebuild of Avenue E Main Street intersection? I thought there was some discussion at some point prior that there was intent of maybe putting a stop sign there and having the Avenue E go all the way down a little farther and that becoming a true intersection.
That is not part of this project, and in working in our partnerships, that has not been presented to as a consideration for further down.
So you have not any recollect or any you I haven't heard that being discussed by...
This is what I understand.
And I know it's not related to this, and that's not right. What I'm getting at, but what I'm getting at is that if they're going to come in there and possibly do that, we may not have to spend some of this money, like on the asphalt and stuff like that, if they're going to come right. And rebuild. So that's all I was kind of going for.
That is still an unknown. I know what you're talking about. I know the conversations that have occurred in the design and in different locations, and there's nothing in concrete yet.
Okay.
And I think council's well-suited to, you know, after your comments and hearing those tonight, to maybe take a pause on that and look at it maybe later on in the project to see if, you know, pathway there with extruded curb is appropriate. I think council's made some good points on that.
Thank you.
Mayor?
Okay. Yes,
quick Richard. Question, Bobby. Are we still looking at a splash pad up there on the end, south end of Avenue E?
For the record, Bobby with Thrill Parks Director. Sorry, Richard. No, we're not
okay.
Anymore. We talked to Union Pacific, and they told us no. So I did put a bunch of different sites out to the community and got a bunch of feedback, which I will be presenting hopefully next council meeting.
Okay. I was thinking maybe that asphalt path would be a little more presentable if we were looking at a splash pad there. So.
Okay. Further question.
Chris, you mentioned if there was a chance that we were going to go with option two only, that you wanted more contingency than what was requested.
Yes.
Can you be more specific about what you want?
If I can see, I can't. Let me look at Bob's.
Yeah.
I need way bigger screen.
It's on page 6, I think.
So that the 30% contingency, I'd ask for your consideration to approve $54,300. That's correct, Tim. Is that right? At 30%? Okay. And then I'd ask your if councils would make a motion on what they approve, and also if they would give formal direction, if grant funds are received, whether we would want to move forward with options 1 and 3, and as well as 2 with those grant funds, and to use 7.34% of the approved funds that council's allocated as a match.
Just to clarify, the 30% is also increased the base
was just asking for 30% of the option two. Yeah.
If that grant funding comes through, I mean, I don't know how restricted it is. Would we have the option not to use it on the asphalt path? I'm completely committed to pedestrian connectivity and making this like as accessible a city as possible. But I just at this point question the utility of that asphalt path and what we're actually connecting to that isn't already connected.
Though we never like to return grant funds, if council just does not feel like that's appropriate expense, whether it's city funds or grant funds, because we want to be frugal with all of it, then we would just not utilize those funds.
Yeah, so I guess, am I understanding correctly then that if we were to receive the specific grant funds you're referencing, if we chose not to use them on this path, we just wouldn't get to use them at all?
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay.
So I guess before a motion goes out there, my personal preference would be to go ahead and approve the funding for option two at the new rate that Chris requested, with a note that should grant funding come through, we would approve its use for options one through three with the required city match. That'll be my preference tonight. Any discussion on that?
I have no problem with the bulb outs, so I'll leave it at that for sure. With the 54.3 with the 30% contingency on the bulb outs. I have a little concern. I'd rather have the grant money be put back in and come back forward for the other stuff, so we know how much exactly of grant money. I don't want to approve the. What I'm concerned about is if we say we only get $5,000, and that we're now authorizing them to do the utility pole and such, I'm concerned about doing that way. If that's what you're leading to, I don't know. I may not have understood exactly what
is the grant fund, the grant that we're talking about. Is it all or nothing? I mean, are we going to either get a large amount or none, or would it be possible that we would only get like $5,000?
No. They wouldn't. They would. Well, first of all, if they could only come back with $5,000, we would know that in advance, and we would let them know that, you know, that's not something that's going to work. Or if it, you know, we want to go ahead and take that, we just do the 7.34 match. However, that's not the – we put in for the full amount, and in these – if they come back with a partial offer, it's not going to – it's, you know, it's maybe $10,000 less, not like that. It would actually be one of the options that just didn't fund. So if that makes sense, am I making sense? And then I'm sorry, Tim clarified to me that – we have to have the engineering fees with option two. So, right? For cultural.
Which is how much?
12,000.
So we're going to 66?
Is that right? 66.2.
Larry is 54,000 plus 12.
Yeah.
So
it's
bumping down to that.
So, I mean, because there was originally a $10,400 difference, do we need to be adding that back in for relocating project drainage and adjusting roadway asphalt depth, or did we ever figure out what that amount is supposed to be for?
Yes, please.
Director Tim Blair, JV Engineers, Councilman Burton Vonderhaar. The $10,400, I believe, is for grant administration for the TMA TAP money for MITD. So that comes out of that. I'm trying to find that budget number here. So the 498, that 11,000 comes out of that for grant administration. That goes to ITD.
Back up for a second, 498?
400,000, 498,000.
Mm-hmm.
The second one for the TMA tap.
Okay. So it's what now?
The 11,000 goes to ITD. They take that off the top to administer the grant.
The $10,400?
Oh, yeah, around 11,000.
Okay. I added up option 1, 2, and 3, and it's $10,400 less than the $140,200 request. So it sounded like that was for something specific, but I'm not seeing that amount anywhere. So I was just trying to find out what it's for and if it's something that is actually being requested in addition to options 1 through 3.
I guess another way, sorry, another way to ask this, so what is the cost to relocate the drainage beds, and what is the cost to do the additional thickness that HAC is requiring?
Those costs are captured in the phase one. It's in the base bid total for $89,900. Those costs have already been captured in that area. But then there's some additional widening that we have to do for those two bulb outs on the east side of Avenue D, which is additional plant mix and pavement, and that is captured in this summary on the engineer's estimate for the $50,200.
I guess I'm confused now.
So we still don't know where that $10,400 is to go.
Because what I was assuming that the additional $10,000 was for this, but you're telling me those already been allocated in the budget. The relocation and that asphalt thickness is already part of the.
I think that's the contingency, isn't it? The 20% contingency.
No,
10-4.
It's all like those. If you look on page 6, the contingencies are. There's not one for option 1, and then there. It's already built into the ask for 2,
right.
And 3.
Sure. Okay.
And then we currently already have a. What is it?
And then I see the 12,000 is additional engineering, design, environmental, but that's more than the 10-4. But it would have still been added in if we're approving option 2 at all.
Right, because the engineering fees are necessary because the engineering hasn't been scoped for the bulb outs, whereas the engineering fees that we already have in the budget have done the engineering on the rest of the project. So. I'm sorry that I wasn't clear on that in my memo. I should have been. I missed that, and I apologize.
And we currently have $140,000 in contingency to begin with without any additional funding.
Are you calling it contingency, or are you saying that's what we have committed to potentially
improving?
No, what
I'm looking on is page. Come on, get rid of this screen.
Or the subtotal $700,500.
Yeah, where you have the very first grand total, you have subtotal 700,000, contingency of 140.
Correct.
So, with the base bid of the 789, so they already have 140 contingency built into this project.
Got it.
The grants, are they? Are you allowed to bury that pole with grant money?
Yes, it's part of our. I had to send them an update. I had to send them a request, and I had to tell them what we needed to do and why and where the deficit's coming from. So it would require council to say, yes, we want to accept those funds if they come in.
How much are you, if we were to get everything, how much have you submitted for?
I submitted for $140,200 less. A 7.34% match. So it'd be $129,000 and some change.
Going back to what you said, if we get all the money, I have no issue with that. I just, okay. My concern is asking. I mean, the hardest part is the $70,000 for the pole, especially if we don't need to move it. Other ones, the bulb outs I completely agree with. I mean, I like the consistency. The asphalt, I'd rather not. I'd rather wait to see what happens with that property there. So I don't have any. And as far as increasing the overall contingency, I'd rather just wait till that's needed, until we start breaking ground and find out there's problems.
Sounds reasonable.
Because we can always come back for. That's where I would stand with my.
Okay. Anybody else?
Anybody else have comment on that? Or are we ready for a motion?
I have one question for the city attorney, if I might. Since I'm a property owner downtown, should I abstain from voting on this issue since?
We've addressed, Councilmember President Cardoza, I think we addressed that earlier, and because it is benefiting the whole business community and not you individually, you can vote.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
All right. I move we approve the expenditure of an additional, $66,300 for what's been described in our packet as option two. And also, should we be successful in obtaining grant funding for these projects, I move we approve their use to cover options one through three with the understanding that council would need to then approve a slightly under 8% match amount. Is that it?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do you have that motion all in order there?
I do now, yes.
All right, we're good to go.
Okay. Does everybody understand the motion? Okay. We have a motion and a second. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank
council,
you.
Council, we appreciate your due diligence and taking the time to go over these with us.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, item 8B, discussion on EDUs for Journeys End. Richard Rhodes.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. For the record, Richard Rhodes. Before you is a request for direction on Keno City Code 763, service connection charges. As you know, in the last 5 or 6 months, we've approved several multifamily projects. We had one developer come forward a month or so ago requesting that as part of the multifamily, instead of paying the one EDU per unit, in this case it was a fourplex, so there were four EDUs per building. They requested something less, perhaps one EDU per dwelling unit. So I put the city code there. We also have a resolution that outlines that it is one EDU per dwelling unit. This is based upon the stream flow, the contribution of that waste into the system. We met for some time. They indicated that it was a financial hardship that they had to pay this. Again, this was just one developer out of a couple, so I indicated to them that the way we would deal with this was just to bring it to council for your direction to see if you would be willing to change that multifamily section of the code down to the per building unit versus the per units. Again, the factor on this is, you know, what are they contributing to the waste flow in the system? And these are two, and some of them are three-bedroom units, which presumably then they're going to have the same stream flow to the system as a single-family resident. So I'll leave it at that and stand for any questions or further discussion.
Questions for Richard?
No questions.
Just for clarification, currently our code is a fourplex pays four EDUs, the eightplex would pay eight EDUs, the 12-plex would pay 12, and so on.
Correct. Okay. It's just per the living unit, which is considered a single living unit.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I mean, my perspective on it is, I live in a house and it's just me and my husband, and we don't do very much laundry. We don't contribute very much to the waste flow, but just the way the system works, I end up paying the same as somebody who has like seven kids. and does like a load of laundry, you know, twice a day. That's just the way it is. So we currently don't have any mechanism to allow for people to make like a specific request based on their actual use to pay less. And I think it would get really confusing if we changed this, because my assumption would be we would need to go back and, I mean, there are multiple multifamily units in the city who have already paid these EDU charges. So my assumption would be we would need to potentially square with them with some sort of a refund if we were to change it.
Potentially, maybe. Typically legislation isn't retroactive unless you decided to make it that way. However, one of the considerations we did discuss at length was the Key Bank settlement and the EDUs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certain that Key Bank, if we all of a sudden said, well, we've got these multifamily units that we're developing here, instead of selling four EDUs per building, we just decided now to sell one. As you know, Key Bank sits at the first of the line in these EDUs, so they're being sold first, and these are non-LID properties for the most part. So that's another factor in the consideration. And we did try to vet out that where would it stop. I mean, for me and for you, you know, as small households, we pay the same as a very large household, but then are we going to say that somebody that has, you know, seven or eight kids is going to pay more than somebody that has zero kids? And then what if the kids go to college during the summer? And, I mean, it's just the detail would just kill any other proposal. So I think in fairness, it's made on assumptions and averages, and my recommendation, quite frankly, would be to keep it the way it is for simplistic purposes and legal purposes.
Would you recommend considering at all any sort of, I mean, I know that we say the Section D says all the fees need to be tendered in full. I assume that, yeah, that this happens towards the beginning of the development process. Would you recommend having any sort of, like, on a case-by-case basis allowance for them to pay, like, half the fees up front and then work out, like, a payment arrangement for the rest? Or does that seem like it would potentially become just too cumbersome?
I think it would be tracking it. You know, we did that waiver of those certain fees, which created that paperwork nightmare. I mean, we had the contract that we set up that had to be recorded against the property, and then when they came in and paid it off, we had to release that lien against the property. So each step in that took hours of staff time to do, and we only did that, you know, on a handful of occasions. I would guess at least multifamilies that we're going to have, you know, if you've got 48 units going in, you're going to have 48 of these that you're going to do. You're going to pay part, and then we're going to have to keep track, because if the developer sells the property, that particular unit, then we're going to have to keep track of that transaction and try to collect it at closing. And if we don't catch that, then we're going to have to be trying to go out to the developer to get it. So I think it's probably best just to keep it the way it is and collect that up front.
That sounds fine.
And I kind of got from my briefing on the meeting that they had held on that it had to do more with an end cost rather than going in costs, so I don't know that would satisfy them.
Okay. Richard, just so I'm clear, a fourplex has four water hookups, four sewer hookups, and four parking back fees.
Correct. Okay. And they didn't question the park impact fee. They questioned this as part of the numbers. If you look at it in the breakdown, I think it was, you know, a single-digit percentage of the overall costs. I think they compared it to NAMPA, which, you know, NAMPA has some problems with funding, and they're going to have to figure out how they're going to come up with additional funding. So I think from that standpoint, and Gordon can step in if he wants to, we are looking now towards the future on maintaining the system and doing the necessary things. NAMPA didn't do that, and now they've got some real problems. So we don't want to give a break today, find out in 5 or 10 years that was the worst choice we made, and now we're having to come back and try to do things differently. So it seems to be working well the way it is.
Mayor, if I could have the floor. I would like to hear from Gordon his feelings as city engineer.
Let's see, how do I say this?
Could you speak into the mic, please, sir?
You don't have to say it gently if you don't want to.
I don't think this would be a good idea.
Okay.
You don't need anything from us if we want to leave it the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. That was the last item on the agenda. We're kind of down to some mayor and council discussion items. I thought we would just give an update on the emergency declaration status and snow and flood operations that have occurred here in the last couple of weeks. I guess we weren't really certain on what to expect and what ACHD's capabilities were when this event had originally started. I know I looked out my office window over at Owyhee Street and could see cars sliding off the road trying to make it up that hill. Bobby Withrow stepped into my office and said, "Mayor, we have some problems. Can we start helping people?" So at that point, I had him contact ACHD and find out what our requirements would be. Basically, they told us that we were a city entity and were free to do as we felt necessary. So at that time, we started out with one backhoe and a skid steer. The other backhoe had some problems. However, they were able to get that up and running fairly soon. So then we were at two backhoes and a skid steer and our little gator with the snow plow in front, which actually was quite helpful there for quite a while until we started getting into ice and that type of thing. But we started out by addressing issues that we saw that were a problem. Then we started getting an overwhelming number of phone calls into City Hall. We addressed issues as they came. Then it just kind of came into a rotation where we started addressing cul-de-sacs in subdivisions and trying to make it where people could get home and go to work and that type of thing there. So as it turns out, ACHD's original plan, because we haven't had this type of an event for a really long time, their plan did not include residential streets, and they didn't have the equipment to do cul-de-sacs. ACHD realized quickly that they needed to add residential streets to their list of duties that they needed to do, so they did get that included in there, and then we were basically our role at that part at that point became following up. We found it much easier when ACHD would go in and plow a subdivision that we could go in and hit the cul-de-sacs then a lot easier, but we were still addressing issues as they came into City Hall. We were getting a pretty good handle on that when that next snowstorm came and then it turned into rain. Then we ended up moving all of our focus into flooding. We went to that. By then it got cold again and froze, so we did end up with some subdivisions that have deep ruts in the roads. Our hope is that with a little bit of warmth tomorrow, even though we have some more snow coming, that we can start addressing some of those subdivisions that have very deep ruts in the roads. Orchard Street over here is one that's particularly bad. If you get sucked into one of those ruts, you're not getting out until you get to somewhere where the rut ends, so kind of like getting on the railroad tracks. I really want to give a shout out to all city staff, those that went and helped with snow removal and flood problems, as well as those who continued to keep the city operating. For every person that we pulled off and put on snow duty, somebody else had to pick up that slack. So when things were really rolling, we had utility billing taking calls, the clerk's office was taking calls, and planning and zoning was taking calls. We were handing Bob and Bobby mounds of post-it notes. So I had Chris put together a form that actually when I could sit on people's desks so when those calls came in, we could keep track of them better and not make a lot of confetti at the end of the day. So all in all, things went pretty well. I don't know that we had any major problems throughout the process. The only damage I know that occurred was one mailbox got taken out, but we quickly repaired that and got it put right back in place. And I'm not sure if the mail lady was able to get to that post or get to that mailbox after we put it back up or not, but we did fix the problem, and we received a lot of thanks, and I think people really appreciated the fact that we stepped up and took care of the problems. It's not necessarily our responsibility to take care of these streets and roadways, but our responsibility is for the people of the city, and that's why I chose to make that move. In regards to and giving a shout out to everyone, Bobby really started out. He was the one that took control and took the lead on the snow operations to begin with. He really did a great job of coordinating and making sure that all of our emergency calls that came in were taken care of. And then Bob Bachman, he stepped in when about the time that the flood control problem started happening, and did great there, and then kind of moved right back into snow and street operations. And so we have two very good and capable leaders sitting at that table over there that did an outstanding job that really went above and beyond. And like I say, everybody that works within the city and all departments stepped up and did a lot of extra work just to make sure that this happened and went smoothly. Originally, I wasn't going to declare an emergency on this because to me it felt like they would just give me authorization to spend money without council's approval, and that wasn't something I really wanted to get into. But with further discussion with Richard Roats, it helped relieve our liabilities if bad things happened, and so I decided with that next event that happened that it would be wise for us to go ahead and make that declaration. We are at the point where it would have been a week ago that we did that, and so in order to extend that, we would have to ask council to extend that tonight and probably put some parameters on. Meridian actually allocated $200,000 to put into theirs. Meridian City was hiring a lot of contract labor to come in and help with their situation. We didn't do that. I really wasn't willing to bust the city's budget on the third week into winter. I didn't think that was a good idea with the storms that are predicted to come. So we're not asking for you to extend that declaration here tonight. I think we're going to be in good shape. All the equipment was being maintained today. I think all the crews have had a rest period, and hopefully tomorrow afternoon we can start addressing some of those ruts in the roads, and then we're just going to keep an eye on the situation, try and keep the streets clear, and make sure people have access and can get to work and get to their jobs and get the emergency care that they need. And police department and fire department have all offered to assist in any way possible, as we have to them. I think we John was ill today, so I wasn't able to get him to put together a total cost to the city at this point. As near as we can tell, Bobby kind of put together an estimate. As near as we can tell, fully loaded all in, we are somewhere in the neighborhood of $18,000 to $20,000. However, that does include a lot of staff time, people that would have normally been here anyway, being here, some of the supplies like calcium chloride and salt and those types of things that we would have used on our facilities anyway are included in there. So I'm not sure exactly what that cost to the city is over and above what our normal day-to-day costs are, but I can tell you that we didn't bust budgets by doing this, and we're going to continue on with that. As far as reimbursement from anyone, I had Richard do a little checking into that today, and I don't know if you want to go ahead and come up and kind of give your overview of what you found on that situation.
Good evening again, Mayor, Council. For the record, Richard Rhodes. What would happen for the for Ada County? They've declared the disaster. The city declared the disaster. So when a combination of the cities, the county, and ACHD reaches $1.4 million, the county can then go to the state and declare, have the state declare a disaster, and that will allocate whatever funds they decide back down to those entities so that we would get a pro rata share of those funds coming back, whatever they decide, at 50%. So if we put in $20,000, we could potentially get up to $10,000, but that then depends on the pro rata share. If we're 10% of the total or 5% of the total, and they give them half of what the total amount is, we would get, you know, a couple percent type of thing. So they haven't done that yet, but they've certainly, with ACHD and Boise City being two of the big entities in that, they've reached that amount, but I didn't get any direction or thought that they're going to go ahead and request that.
And then the meeting that I attended yesterday with Ada City County Emergency Management System, there were some other stipulations to that too, that you had to actually show that you spent enough of your budget that you would have to, say for instance, you would have to suspend some of your policing services because you spent your budget to a point where it had to come from somewhere, and a certain percentage was there, or there were some other things that were mentioned, and I don't, in our case, that's certainly not the case. I think that, although the sergeant's giggling, so maybe he needs a day off. No, I'm kidding. those things are up in there. I certainly don't expect that we will be reimbursed for any of this, but we'll follow along, and if everybody else gets on to something, we'll certainly follow suit. The other thing that we have recognized through this is that, especially at this point, we really don't have equipment to handle sidewalks. Everything that we have is too big or too wide. We used our gator with the little snow plow on it at an angle. We can do the green belt and those types of things, but at this point in time, with the snow melted down and turned into ice, that thing won't go 5 feet, so I'm not sure what. Yesterday when I was inquiring into that, Boise City was talking about some kind of a little baby loader thing on tracks they could drive through, but it was still only good up to a 4 foot wide sidewalk, so some of the older residences, they couldn't deal with sidewalks yet, so snow blowers, I think it would probably kill them to throw ice chunks through them like that. So we did do what we could to assist the CUNA School District and get their sidewalks in front of their schools open, and also assisted the school district in some other efforts. I would really like to say, though, that I'm just really proud of everybody that works for the city and the community itself. It was amazing when we were out there doing these operations. You know, you'd come across people that were out there really working hard, trying to get their drains, the gutters open so that the drains could, water could drain to the drains, and I mean, really putting some effort into that. Some people kept their sidewalks clear through all of this. My hat's off to them. I don't know how they did that. That's a mountain of a job. So especially when people keep coming through with the snow plows and throwing snow and junk back on them. I'm just really proud of the people of this community that stepped up and did that. And, you know, once we got past the initial snowstorm or two, and it was just an inconvenience, and then people were kind of upset that things weren't getting taken care of. It was kind of like reality sunk in, and everybody stepped on board and just kind of took off and really went to helping out. So I couldn't be prouder. We when I went to the meeting yesterday, we got accolades from Ada County Highway District, and our Commissioner Kent Goldthorpe said that he was really glad that he was our representative, because we were the least of any problems out here. In fact, they didn't even know we were out here hardly, because of the phone calls that came in. They certainly sent out the trucks and support and everything we needed, but as far as the office goes, they weren't bothered by us at all. So I was really happy that we were able to make that happen and lighten their load so that they could get in and get the priorities and the school bus routes open. But boy, that first day they showed up out here and started going through residential neighborhoods, man, it was like Calvary came to town. So I think all in all it went very well, and like I said, we're just going to go ahead and continue and keep up with our operations. So,
Mayor?
Yes.
I'll just, on hopefully behalf of the city, citizens, I do want to commend you for your leadership during this crisis, if you want to call it. But I think that leadership that you have has come out, and I think that the willingness of you going above and beyond actually encouraged others to go above and beyond to help pull the city together. So I just want to commend you on that. I think that was a very job well done on your behalf, along with all the other citizens of this community.
So. Thank you. Mostly I didn't really do any more than anybody else except allow the city to do their job, and we knew that it didn't matter whose responsibility it was. Our responsibility was to the citizens, and that's the direction we went. So thank you, though. That's kind of all I had for tonight. I don't know if anybody else has anything else.
Mayor?
Yes?
Did Mr. Law want any kind of discussion tonight on well 5?
Is there anything that wasn't clear about it?
It was mostly informational to let you know that there is an issue. Gordon's going to go ahead and check into it, and we just want to make sure you were aware so that when things like that pop up in the budget, it's not a shock to you that there's a situation.
I guess my question is, there was 5 recommended course of action. Do you need anything from us or at this time?
Mayor?
Yes.
And President Cardoza, I don't think I need any direction. Unless you're concerned about one of those items, then tell me not to pursue it.
I guess I do have one. Where does the radioactive decay come from? Was it just coming up through the water from the ground?
It started 14 billion years ago when uranium and thorium were created, and they decay over time, and those radioactive products of their decay is what we're talking about here. And they tend to accumulate in some places and not in others, and in well 5 they've accumulated.
Where's well 5?
It's over in Discovery.
So all this came about when you were in grade school?
Ouch.
Well, he's thankful he doesn't have to deal with you much
more. Short timer's attitude. That's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you, Gordon.
Anything else? Meeting adjourned. Thank you.